The next case on the Southern Panel's argument calendar today is Residential Credit Solutions, Inc. versus TRP Fund 4 et al., number 75384. Ready to proceed?
Yes, I am. Okay. May I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Christina Miller. I'm an attorney for the appellant Residential Credit Solutions, which I will refer to during today's argument as RCS. There are numerous bases upon which we urge this Court to reverse and remand the case back to the District Court for further proceedings. The first of those that I would like to address before you today is a procedural error made by the District Court when the District Court denied RCS's motion for leave to amend its complaint to include factual allegations regarding Freddie Mac's ownership interest. That information was disclosed 6 months prior during discovery. Specifically, respondent TRP Fund had served written discovery requests upon RCS, and TRP itself directly asked RCS, is there a federal interest? And if so, are you planning on asserting the federal foreclosure bar as a defense? RCS timely responded to that discovery in the affirmative, telling TRP, yes, Freddie Mac owns this loan, and yes, we do plan on asserting the federal foreclosure bar as a defense. After that time period, TRP did not take any further action in discovery. It did not seek to serve any additional discovery requests concerning Freddie Mac's interest. It did not file a motion to compel any further discovery response regarding Freddie Mac's interest. It did not subpoena documents or subpoena Freddie Mac for a deposition. TRP sat back and did nothing. Consequently, the District Court entered an order continuing out the trial date and resetting litigation deadlines. It provided the parties with a deadline of June 5th for leave to amend their pleadings. RCS moved by that deadline to amend its pleadings to conform to the evidence, specifically to assert factual allegations regarding Freddie Mac's interest, as well as asserting some additional causes of action against the HOA, which was a party to the case at that point in time, again, based off of factual issues that had come to light during the discovery process, including misrepresentations made in the CC&Rs, as well as the documents disclosed by the HOA's foreclosure agent showing that the notice of default was not mailed to the beneficiary of record of the deed of trust. Unfortunately, during the motion for leave to amend proceedings...
On that point, could you discuss what the record shows with respect to the mailing of notice?
I can, Your Honor, yes.
I'd like you to hone in on that point, if you would.
Absolutely. And I think that's appropriate in light of additional published authorities that have come to light since briefing in this case, specifically the Resources Group decision in July of this year. Attached to TRP's second motion for summary judgment was Exhibit 4. Exhibit 4 was a complete copy of the mailings held in the collection file for the HOA trustee. Those mailings showed that the notice of default was mailed to three entities only, or three persons and entities. One was the borrower, the other was the HOA's own community manager, and the third was the state of Nevada. There was no recipient listed or in the actual mailings themselves, which were included in that packet of documents. None of those recipients was any entity identified in the deed of trust or in the recorded assignment of the deed of trust.
So neither MERS or Aquin Loan?
That's correct. Even the originating lender was not served with notice of default.
And is it also, and of course I want to hear from the other side, but are the facts correct that at the time of the notice, I think there were a couple of notices, but at the time the notices were sent out before the sale in August of 2014, I think that was the date, that Aquin was the holder of record of the deed of trust?
That's correct. There was a recorded assignment into Aquin Loan Servicing's name recorded on August 10th of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
The operative notice of default, which was the second one, the first notice of default had been rescinded.
Mm-hmm.
The second notice of default was recorded on March 12th of 2013. So there was a significant period of time, about 7 months, after the recording of the assignment to Ocwen, that that second notice of default was recorded.
And the sale was in 2014?
Early 2014, January 3rd. That's okay. Correct.
All right. So, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So one of the issues you've raised on appeal was that the sale was not properly noticed.
That's correct.
Okay. And was that, how was that raised, or was it raised to Judge Bell or the district court?
It was raised on several occasions, actually. TRP had originally filed their motion for summary judgment in February of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
February of 2017. When they filed that motion for summary judgment, in response, RCS raised the lack of mailings. And again, those documents were included by TRP Fund as support for finding that the foreclosure sale was done correctly and in compliance with the statutes. So that was the first time it was raised. It was then raised again in TRP's second motion for summary judgment. It was raised for a third time in RCS's motion for reconsideration, which it filed after publication of the Shadow Canyon opinion. And at that point in time, and still to this date, it's undisputed that those are the mailings. You won't hear from TRP or the HOA that there are additional mailings that went out that there's no record of. We're all in agreement there was only three recipients of that notice of default.
What about the notice of sale?
The notice of sale did go out to Ocwen Loan Servicing. We do not dispute that. We don't dispute that evidence. But I think it is more important that mailing of the notice of default go out. And I believe this court really touched on that in the resources group analysis, where you reiterated that it's a notice prejudice analysis that has to take place when there's no mailing of the notice of default. And part of that analysis has to be, was there actual notice from some other source? And importantly, in this case, the notice of default was not mailed to MERS or to a prior beneficiary, the original lender, anybody else who had an interest identified in the deed of trust. So there was no other source that would have told Ocwen, hey, by the way, there's a lien out here, and they've now recorded a notice of default. So in this case, very similar to what happened in Resources Group, there's no evidence of the notice of default being mailed to the beneficiary of record, and there's no evidence of actual notice to the beneficiary. And, Your Honors, I would urge you, on presented with that evidence, that there should be a presumption of prejudice at that point, because there was not the 80-day grace period provided under NRS 107 to the beneficiary at that point to be able to take the steps to cure, compromise, or contest the HOA's alleged default, or excuse me, the borrower's default to the HOA. So taking that fact together, if this court is unwilling to look at the prejudice factor itself, because ideally that should be the analysis done by the district court, and because it wasn't done by the district court in this case, and potentially because the briefing on summary judgment happened over 2 years ago, we didn't have the benefit of Resources Group, we didn't have the benefit of the West Sunset 2050 decision either. And in Resources Group, this court advised the district court upon remand to go back and do that analysis to determine whether the foreclosure sale was void. This court also directed the district court to do an analysis of whether the foreclosure sale is voidable because it's commercially unreasonable. And in that, the district court in this particular case did not do the necessary analysis. The district court solely looked at price and said, well, we can't look at price as being the sole determinative factor in finding that a foreclosure sale is commercially unreasonable. And when presented upon reconsideration with the Shadow Canyon case and with evidence, particularly the failure to mail the notice of default to the beneficiary and the continuing representations in the HOA CC&Rs to, and these representations are a matter of public record. They're made not only to lenders and the homeowners, but to the members of the public at large. Those misrepresentations continue to exist in the CC&Rs, and they are another avenue for this court to find fraud, oppression, or unfairness to the beneficiary of record. Your Honors, if you don't have any other questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
You may. Thank you, Ms. Miller. Mr. Hong, how are you today?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Joseph Hong for Respondent, TRP Fund 4, LLC, and if I may refer to TRP Fund 4 as TRP.
Your Honor. Sure, of course.
And I'll reserve maybe about 4 or 5 minutes for my colleague, the other respondent for the HOA.
Sure.
Your Honor, it appears Your Honors are focusing really on this notice issue, and it was undisputed that the notice of sale was absolutely received by the bank, RCS here, and even counsel admits to that. The issue is really, what about the notice of default? Now, the record does show that there was no notice of default mailed to either Aquin or any predecessor. However, respectfully, we believe this court addressed this very issue in the West Sunset case, because in that case, the bank alleged, and they were correct, saying, hey, we never got the notice of default. But this court held, hey, you received the notice of sale, that's undisputed, so you must present, proffer evidence of prejudice. How were you prejudiced by not receiving the notice of default? And that's the analysis.
How do you reconcile the resource group case, the opinion that came out on that regarding the notice of default?
Well, again, I believe, Your Honor, that the burden goes to the bank here, and the bank must proffer some kind of evidence as to how it was prejudiced. It can't just say, hey, we didn't get the notice, that's it. There needs to be a connection there.
But it's after the fact. I mean, they didn't even have the opportunity to cure nothing.
Well, and that's the point, is where's the evidence from the bank alleging that? How do we know they would have even have cured anything or have attempted it? So it's so speculative. That's how we look at this, Your Honor. Again, it seems the focal point of this hearing and this argument is really this notice, because I believe the procedural...
Well, not entirely. I wanted to get an understanding of the notice issues, and I appreciate your candor in acknowledging that there was no notice of the default sent to essentially the holders of the deed of trust or their predecessors, Aquin at least.
I will say this, Your Honor, I'm sorry, but this argument was not raised in the opposition to my client's motion for summary judgment. Mm-hmm. It just was not. And we can look at the record, and I know counsel for RCS claims that this argument was made. It was not. It set forth three arguments regarding the mortgage savings clause, bona fide purchaser, whatnot. But
you also counter motion to quiet title, so it's still incumbent and it's your burden to show that you deserve title.
I agree, Your Honor, and I believe going back to Shadowwood, all my client needed to really show was the recorded foreclosure deed or the trustee's deed upon sale and the recitals contained therein serving as conclusive proof. I believe that was the burden that my client needed to satisfy for the presumption.
Well, I'll ask Ms. Miller to address your contention that she didn't adequately preserve this in the district court. Yeah. But there was an issue, I think, that was preserved, and that seems to be the fact that they were relying on the Freddie Mac's interest in this loan. So more than just the notice, there are other issues that we are interested in. I just happened to ask about the
yes,
other.
Your Honor.
So let's get into the Freddie Mac issue, because...
On the Freddie Mac issue, this lawsuit was filed in early 2016 by the bank. Mm-hmm. The foreclosure happened back in 2014, January. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely no rhyme or reason why the Freddie Mac argument was never raised until 2017, close to the end of discovery and trial already being set. And I believe the Honorable Judge Bell was absolutely correct in denying it, saying, hey, you have to show why it took so long. And in fact, this panel of your honors, in a case that just came down in July of this year, in a footnote, completely confirmed the district court denying a motion to amend. And this court held, hey, if the facts were known from the onset, there's no abuse of discretion by the district court. And the district court, the Honorable Judge Bell, quote, stated it would be extraordinarily prejudicial. And one more point on that, Your Honor.
But is Ms. Miller correct that the in discovery responses early on, they asserted that they would be relying on Freddie Mac's defense?
No, Your Honor, she's incorrect. The discovery request, the interrogatory request was, is this Fannie or Freddie, and when was it acquired? Critical, because obviously, if that interest was not acquired prior to the HOA sale, the federal foreclosure bar is just irrelevant. Doesn't come into play. Mm-hmm. The answer was simply, it was owned by Freddie Mac during the time of the foreclosure, but there was no date even given. In fact, plaintiff responds as follows. The loan is currently being serviced on behalf of Freddie Mac, who is operating under a conservatorship that began on September 6, 2008. That's it. So there is no notice.
What was the record site you're referring to, Mr. Holmes?
The record site that I'm referring to, Your Honor, is appellant's opening brief, page 18.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if you were referring to a part of the record.
Well, that's part of the record, and that's incorporated in the bank's
brief.
And so that's for the bank to say, well, that put my client on notice. Not at all, because we all agree, again, if Fannie or Freddie did not own this loan, underlying loan, at the time of the HOA foreclosure sale, there is no federal foreclosure bar argument. We know that. So this whole...
How did that not put you on notice?
Well...
At least inquiry notice. I mean, how did that not put you on notice if they had taken in a conservatorship in 2008 and then coupled with the other answer that you...
Because what happens a lot of times, Your Honor, in these cases, what's happened a lot is after the HOA foreclosure sale, the assignment deeds of trust have been assigned to various entities and banks, including Fannie or Freddie. That's why it was so critical that my client in the discovery asked, when was it acquired? That would have put my client on notice.
But they said Freddie and Fannie owned it at the time of the foreclosure, correct?
No. The loan is currently being serviced. This is in 2016. Currently being serviced on behalf of Freddie Mac, who is operating under a conservatorship that began in September 6, 2008. That's it. So, as far as my client knows, the loan or the deed of trust could have been assigned in 2015, 2016. We don't know. And all RCS had to have done was provide the date when the loan was allegedly acquired. We see that all the time, Your Honor, in these cases.
But why wasn't it proper for them to try to amend the complaint to put that information in and to perfect their claims?
Because, number one, it was grossly untimely, Your Honor, and two, even the motion to amend, by the way, which was filed on the last day of amendments being allowed, the proposed complaint, amended complaint, still did not identify when Freddie Mac allegedly acquired this loan. It did not. It just kind of breezed through it and just said, Freddie Mac owns the loan. So even the amendment itself, the proposed amended complaint, second amended complaint, would be futile. It just never specified when this loan was acquired. Because we see this all the time before I sit down for my colleague is, all the banks always in these HERA cases will say the loan was acquired in September of 2007. The loan was acquired in October of 2006. We're not here. We don't even have a date, Your Honor. So, again, based on the abuse of discretion standard, respectfully, I believe the Honorable Judge Bell was spot on in saying, no, this is way too late. Way too late in the game. If this was truly acquired even at the time of the foreclosure sale in 2014, well, this lawsuit was filed in 2016 by the bank, Your Honor. They should have known, and they should have alleged it at that point. If it was truly acquired by Freddie Mac, then the question is, why didn't they allege that at the time of the filing of the complaint 2 years after the foreclosure sale? And why wait another year, 2017, 3-4 months before the scheduled trial date in November?
Okay.
Good afternoon, Justices, opposing counsel, may it please the court. My name is Kelly Blatnick. I'm of counsel with Boyack, Gorman, Anthony, and I represent Antigua Maintenance Owners Incorporation. And if I may, I will refer to Antigua as the association. In this matter, the lower court correctly denied the motion to amend as to the three additional claims against the association, the claims of misrepresentation, breach of contract, and breach of covenant of good faith and fair dealings. Although the bank makes a great deal of the mortgage savings clause, it's already been stated in NRS 116.31162 that no agreement may alter or amend anything within NRS 116, and therefore, clearly, the statutory law will trump what's in the CC&Rs. Furthermore, the CC&Rs, like many of them, contain what is called a severability clause. Section 14.2 of the covenants, conditions, and restrictions that are recorded states, the provisions hereof shall be deemed independent and severable, and a termination of invalidity or partial invalidity or unenforceability of any one provision or portions hereof by a court of competent jurisdiction shall not affect the validity or enforceability of any other provision hereof. In addition to that, the preamble on page 2 of the CC&R states that the covenants, conditions, and restrictions are made to be in compliance with Nevada Revised Statute Sections 1.6.110 and sequence and any amendments. Therefore, rather than having to amend the CC&Rs every time there's a change in either what a super priority lien is or what other restrictions may be made, the associations are well able to rely upon the severability clause stating that if something in the CC&Rs is not enforceable, that part is just struck out and no longer exists. This court itself decided in the SFR case in 2014 and stated that the mortgage saving clauses in pretty much all CC&Rs are considered invalid by the NRS 116 statutory language. Therefore, there should have been or could have been no actual justifiable reliance upon a mortgage protection clause that was in a recorded document that contained a severability clause. And when it was very clear that the NRS 116 stated, nothing, no agreement can waive or change these priorities. And when you look at misrepresentation, one of the reasons why it was futile is that there must be justifiable reliance. There's no showing that the HOA directly went to the bank and said, we're making this clause because we want you to give this property or give the money to the dolls so they can buy it. That's not what happened. There's no justifiable reliance. As to breach of contract, this is simple contract law. Offer acceptance consideration. They are not in privity of contract, not the association, not the bank, not the lender. They didn't enter into a contract. There wasn't offer. There wasn't acceptance. There wasn't consideration, and therefore there can be no breach of contract where there is no contract. And because there's no contract and no breach of contract, that goes to the third claim that Judge Bell did not allow to be added, and that is the covenant of good faith and fair dealings. Because there is no contractual relationship between the bank or the lender and the association, there is no way for the association to have breached the covenant of good faith and fair dealings. Of interest is that Nevada Association Services, who prepared and sent out all the notices, of which the bank did receive, or its predecessor in interest did receive, the notice of lien as well as the notice of foreclosure. And this property went delinquent in 2012. The foreclosure wasn't
but
until 2014.
Not the notice of default?
Yes, Justice, you are correct.
And the notice of lien would have predated the notice of default.
Yes. So the issue is
so they knew enough to send it. They knew enough to send the notice of lien to Aucoin or Aucoin's predecessor, but they didn't send the notice of default.
That is correct, and I cannot explain their actions, and as they were voluntary reasons, they're not here.
Well, I'm not asking you to do that. I'm just trying to understand the factual sequence here. And I appreciate your candor in describing that. That's of concern. Now, we'll ask Ms. Miller to address whether or if this issue was raised to the district court. I take it you agree with Mr. Hong that it was not. The absence of notice of default.
Could you rephrase that a little more clearly? As
your colleague has argued that the notice of default, the absence of a notice of default being mailed to the lender, was not raised to the district court. Do you agree with Mr. Hong on that?
At this time, I don't remember that it was, but I also know that I was focusing on other issues as to whether or not the three additional claims against the HOA were futile. And so, in all honesty, I was so focused on those three claims and the futility thereof, I didn't look at the issues of the notice of default as much as I did. Was there a contract? Did the HOA make misrepresentations? Did the HOA benefit? Was there a benefit conferred? So, in all candor, I was not focused upon that.
I understand. Sure.
And I give the balance of my time to my colleague.
30 seconds. I just want to be really clear, Your Honor. Your Honors, the argument of notice of no default was not raised against my client's motion for summary judgment, but I believe it was raised as to the HOA's motion for summary judgment. I want to make that clear.
Well, that's part of why I'm asking these questions.
Right.
Because to me, it was in front of the district court through somebody's summary judgment motion, and so I wanted to clarify.
Right.
That.
So when I was referring to it not being it, it was as to my.
But those oppositions were filed at about the same time, weren't they?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So the subject matter of a waiver, or excuse me, the subject matter of the absence of the notice of default was known to counsel and to the court at the time that the summary judgment was ruled on.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's
thank correct. You, Mr. Hong.
Thank you, Your Honors. And I'm not sure if you still need me to address that point, but there are additional places in the record before the district court where the lack of notice due to the failure to mail the notice of default was presented to the court. It was first presented in the complaint. The allegations alleged that there was insufficient mailing of the notice of default. The opposition to TRP's first motion for summary judgment included that. The opposition to the HOA's motion for summary judgment, as well as the motion for reconsideration, specifically based off of Shadow Canyon. The other question that Your Honors had posed to Mr. Hong included the amendment, and it appeared to be whether there was an undue delay, which Mr. Hong advised this court there was an undue delay because we never told anybody when Freddie Mac acquired its notice. Well, I would like to draw the court's attention to the addendum attached to RCS's opening brief, which specifically includes a copy of those discovery requests. And specifically at ADD008, interrogatory number 13, TRP asked, please state whether or not you claim an interest in the deed of trust on behalf of any other entity or governmental agency. The answer was yes. We claim that Freddie Mac owns this loan. Then TRP asked at interrogatory number 17, and that is ADD010, if you assert that the foreclosure sale was barred by 12 U.S.C. 4617 J3, which we all know as the federal foreclosure bar, please identify which entity held an interest that was covered by the federal foreclosure bar. Again, it was answered, federal foreclosure bar in this case covers Freddie Mac, which is under the conservatorship of FHFA. There is absolutely no obligation that when we amended or sought to amend our complaint, that very specific details of Freddie Mac's ownership had to be pled in the amended complaint. Nevada requires notice pleading. This is not a fraud-based claim. There was
I get your argument there, but Mr. Hong's reading and recitation of the response to the interrogatory about when was that interest acquired seems to at least have warranted a supplement to the answer identifying the date.
And, Your Honor, I think a supplement absolutely would have happened because pursuant to the court's order in April of 2017, discovery was extended until September 13th of 2017. Mm-hmm. So when we moved on June 5th to amend, there was almost 4 months remaining, or at least 3.5 months of discovery. It could have been done, but the court ruled that we waived the defense, and RCS was not willing to go against a court's order, suddenly disclosing evidence for a defense we were not allowed to raise. Your Honors, I'd also like to address the prejudice issue. Mr. Hong raised the fact that there's absolutely no evidence in the record to show prejudice, and I'd like to make sure the record reflects there is numerous items of evidence in the record to show prejudice. Similar to the Resources Group case where at the time of trial, there was evidence in the record showing that the condominium rider, or I think it was the planned unit development rider attached to the deed of trust in Resources Group, said that a lender may pay assessments due in HOA and add it to the balance of the loan. That identical language is found in the condominium rider in this case. And specifically, that was attached to the original complaint. It's at volume one of the appendix, JA00313333. Also included in the deed of trust itself were provisions that allowed a lender to pay any and all amounts necessary to protect its interest and add them to the balance of the loan. And, Your Honor, the deed of trust was also attached to the original complaint. We'd also submit to the court that the CCNRs and their continued use of mortgagee protection language puts the world on notice that the deed of trust continues to remain valid. And included within that are specific sentences that say we are inducing certain lenders, including Freddie Mac, into lending within our community. Those are all located in Article 12 of the CCNRs, also attached to the original complaint. It's Volume 1 of the appendix at JA52-175. Your Honors, I have a couple other points of prejudice, if you'd like me to point them out. Otherwise, I will rest on the briefs.
Unless there are questions by my colleagues, I think your time has expired.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your time.
Miller.